Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send in a question or a favorite recipe, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. Or visit our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you would like to hear prior shows, the last five are archived on our website, recipeforpeacenow.com. All of the shows, including the last five, are archived on the website for the radio station, hello, at blogtalkradio.com/Recipe for Peace Now. Thanks. Now let's get started. This time we're going to talk about having a sense of humor. And I think that's rather important, and I see because we announced the topics a little in advance that a lot of people were interested in the topic. And really, it will make for a better session, a better workshop, a better seminar, a better mediation, whatever it is we're doing, if we can keep our sense of humor. And not take everything as an offense. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because sometimes people don't mean to be rude, even though they've said something or they've done something that seems, well, let's just say not very polite. Mm-hmm. So, like we oftentimes do, we're going to start out with just a general question. And I think the question is, what is a sense of humor? What are we talking about? What makes a sense of humor? And I will tell you that it is, I'm going to start with a negative. I don't usually do that. But a sense of humor, and thank you, I see we have lots of participation. Thank you all for being here. When we talk about a sense of humor, and I want to make this rather clear, we are not talking about telling a joke. Not actual the telling of a funny story or joke or something like that, because humor in that sense, comedy, I'm going to call it, is sometimes misunderstood. It's kind of like sarcasm. I always say never use sarcasm because it might be taken wrong, might be taken literally. And that's how telling a joke is, too. You must be very careful. Now, people are disagreeing with me, and of course you can disagree with me. That's why we're having a discussion. But the key to, because I've had so many people disagree, I'm going to revise the statement. You can only tell a funny story if you're very, very, very certain of your audience and that they will understand the nuance and that they will take it the proper way. Now, it is true, and this is being pointed out, and thank you all for all of your participation, that sometimes you have a group of very like-minded people. They come from the same background. They have pretty much the same ideas of the world, the same values. And if you tell a joke or a story that is aimed at them, they'll understand it and appreciate it. And I've been informed it will break the ice. Okay, but you must be certain. I'm going to say it depends. Mm-hmm. And people say I say that all the time, and I do, yes. It depends on the group. Small group, you're very certain that they're like-minded. I don't, even in that group, as people are saying, even in that group, not to have an off-color joke, yes. Off-color is an Americanism, I suppose. It means nothing that is, it is possible to take scandalously. You know, nothing insulting to anyone else, nothing that makes, nothing that's not very for children's ears, if you know what I mean. Not something that is, well, yeah, people are saying not something that's pornographic. But I would assume that none of us would know a pornographic joke. No, he wouldn't. But nothing that is too off-center. Mm-hmm. Yes, but generally speaking, and I guess I deal with very diverse groups is what it really is, be very careful about telling a joke or a story. Although a lot of you are saying that it does indeed break the ice, and I can thank you. Thank you for all of your participation. And some people are like sending me a joke or a little story or something. And yes, they're all very charming, but they need the right audience so that everyone understands what's funny about them. Because quite frankly, I got to tell you, since this is a global show, and you and I are not necessarily from the same background, most of the things that people are sending me, I get, but some of them I don't understand why they're funny. And that's really the truth. and I never take offense. I'm not offensive or anything, but I don't understand the joke, if you know what I mean. And if you're not real certain that people will understand the joke, don't do it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Err on the side of caution. Okay. So now that I've been modified, and you see that, I really thought not to when we started. In fact, it was the opening sentence that I said. But people had an opinion, and thank you for all of your participation. And people disagreed with me, and I modified my opinion because I understood the reasoning, and I modified it to be acceptable in certain circumstances. But you see that we have negotiated, and I have changed my opinion. And isn't that the goal of a lot of negotiation and a lot of our mediations and workshops and seminars, so that we can get people to see a different aspect, see a different area, see a different idea, and modify their opinion. Mm-hmm. When I came in, I was certain that you shouldn't. And now I'm certain that you shouldn't in 95% of the time. But I can see that there's a 5% there that it would be funny and lovely and everyone would laugh appropriately and it would break the ice. Mm-hmm. Oh, this is interesting. People are saying that not only is this, well, maybe it's more than 5%. People are arguing about the percentage. Okay, we won't do percentages. But people are saying that it's a good way to create a convivial atmosphere, which is what Recipe for Peace now advocates, of course, to have people take turns telling a story. Okay. If you're certain of your group, and you're certain that everybody knows what's appropriate. I just don't like something that could go wrong, I guess. But you guys, a lot of you are certain that it won't go wrong. So, you know, I don't deal with your groups. So if you're dealing with groups where you're fairly certain, where you're quite certain, yeah, I modify my opinion. I'm going to say go for it. You know, I always say there are no, Recipe for Peace now has no rules, really, and we don't. It's whatever works, which is why we talk about the different areas, but we don't have a list of rules that we can email you. It's whatever you have to modify. You have to think about it according to your situation. So let's get back to our question. What is a sense of humor? Mm-hmm. And thank you for all of your participation. And thank you for all of your interest. How interesting. Suki and a lot of people are saying that having a sense of humor is not taking everything so seriously. Mm-hmm. That's very good definition. Not taking everything so seriously. Being willing to see that it was done in good faith, whatever it was said. Not taking everything so seriously. Mm-hmm. And Ogano adds to it and says that it's not only not taking everything so seriously, but understanding that people express themselves in different ways. Understanding that people express themselves in different ways. You know, some people do have rather a harsh way of presenting themselves, don't they? And I don't think they always mean to. They just have that kind of a, yeah, people are calling it a habit. And I guess it is. They always kind of seem like they're fighting with you. Ever deal with people like that? They're rather, they just got that attitude about them. And we've talked about body language and tone of voice and like that. And there's some people that just do this. They always seem like they're fighting with you, even if they're not. You know, they say the simplest sentences like let's go to lunch, like we're going to fight. And you've got to understand that, as O'Gana says, people express themselves in different ways. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and some people are very, yeah, people say some people are very abrupt. They never hardly say anything. That's expressing yourself in a different way, too. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know people, I've dealt with people and know people who think nodding ahead and not saying anything verbally is really an entire day's worth of communication. Yeah. And you know me, I kind of chat at them. It's hard to just nod your head at me. Nan says that having a sense of humor is not becoming insulted even when someone else is rude. Ah, now isn't that true? Mm-hmm. That goes with not taking things too seriously and understanding that people express themselves in different ways. But it's a step further. And I usually turn rudeness away with humor. Because if you turn rudeness away with rudeness, then you have fallen into playing their game, and you will be fighting. I mean, not physically, but you'll be arguing. And it will be hard to change that around. The dynamic of the group will change. Mm-hmm. If you meet rudeness with rudeness, you've gone to their level. If you meet rudeness with a sense of humor and embarrass them in front of the group, they'll think twice about being rude again. Mm-hmm. Not becoming insulted even when someone else is rude. But if you meet rudeness with humor, everyone will laugh, and that will defuse the situation. I always meet rudeness with a sense of humor. And if someone is being rude, and we've discussed, if you want to hear prior shows, last five, our website, recipeforpeacenow.com, all the shows, blogtalkradio.com/recipeforpeacenow. We've discussed uncivility and people being rude. And the way to deflect that is to have a sense of humor about it. Mm-hmm. And I butt in because we're the leader, right? We're the host. It's our job to keep the dynamic civil, to keep the group going. I jump in not only when somebody is rude to me, because usually they're not, right? They're not usually rude to us because we're the third party impartial oftentimes. We're leading it, the seminar, the workshop, the mediation, but we're not really a party to it oftentimes. In fact, most of the time. But if you are the leader, you jump in when anybody's rude to anybody so that the answer is not equally uncivil. And the group dynamic degenerates. Mm-hmm. Yes, that's a very important point about sense of humor. And it's really a tool to get people to be civil. Yeah, pardon me. Got all excited there. Kaylin says that having a sense of humor, which is this point, is being civil and diplomatic in the face of uncivility. You betcha. Being civil and diplomatic in the face of uncivility. It's a way to prevent uncivility. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Deborah says that having a sense of humor is being able to diffuse an argument in a pleasant manner. Yeah, that's what we're doing, right? We're diffusing an argument in a pleasant manner. We are preventing it from escalating. Mm-hmm. We're preventing it from happening, hopefully. Diffuse an argument in a pleasant manner. So, why people are asking not only what is a sense of humor, but why you need it, because people are saying, that, thank you for all of your participation, that you can diffuse civility by, you can diffuse uncivility in a more straightforward manner than you having a sense of humor. I think that when you, whenever you're raised to civility, uncivility, and you are trying to prevent a response, I think it's always a sense of humor. You know, a sense of humor doesn't actually have to be funny, right? It's not being a comedian, really. It's being in control more than anything else, right? I think people are thinking of a sense of humor as saying something funny. Not necessarily. It's not losing control of your own response and giving a response that diffuses an argument, a rudeness, a fight. Mm-hmm. It doesn't necessarily have to be funny. It's this is not a comedy routine. It's a way of looking at things and not getting hostile, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the question is being asked, why should we maintain a sense of humor? Why do we need it? Why can't we just be diplomatic and just tell people to sit down and stop being uncivil? Which, in I know that we all have personal characteristics and personal ways of handling things, right? Right. And those of you who have been here before, and thank you for coming back. And those of you who are new, say welcome, and please do come back. Pardon me. And you all know that I tend to be good-natured and have a sense of humor and try to get people to not respond hostily and to not be hostile again, because I'm big on civility and the convivial dynamic of the group. Mm-hmm. And I won't let someone derail that. There's usually one person who wants to give it a try, right? And I just refuse to let them. It's like you can't argue with someone, you can't fight with someone who refuses to fight. Mm-hmm. No, we won't have it. It just won't be done. And I use a sense of humor. Not everybody does, but I think it's effective. Mm-hmm. So the next question is, why should we maintain a sense of humor? It is, in my case, and you all know that I have 30 years of experience. I have a real lot of experience. I've seen workshops, seminars, mediations, especially mediations and arbitrations, where the mediator, the arbitrator, the third party impartial, has no sense of humor about the proceedings, no leeway, no, takes everything very seriously, and doesn't tend to be civil and diplomatic in the face of uncivility, as Kaylin would say. And I've seen those mediations and arbitrations fail because the third-party impartial was leading them, couldn't work it out. It's a way of working things out so that you get to a successful outcome. And that's really our goal. It doesn't make a difference, really, how we get there. Our goal is to get to the successful outcome. Now, let's see why other people think that you need a sense of humor. But I think not being funny, but being always in control and preventing uncivility is what a sense of humor will do. Mm-hmm. And Frankie says that having a sense of humor is a way to effectively communicate. Effectively communicate. And we're getting a lot of agreement about that. We've all seen it where someone, the person in charge, is very, very inflexible. And it doesn't work out well. I mean, maybe if you've got a class, an actual seminar and workshop, where people are obligated to come, like a workplace compliance, that's different. Now, I'll actually use a sense of humor to diffuse rudeness no matter what. But the people in a compliance workshop or seminar must be there. It's part of their job obligation. And therefore, it's not a civil or an uncivil atmosphere. It is a compliant atmosphere. Mm-hmm. I still think it should be convivial, and I think it should be civil. But if someone in that is rude, you don't need it. You can reply sternly if you need to. I don't generally, it's not my style, but you can. But if you've got a mediation or arbitration, something where people are voluntarily there, and you're trying to reach a successful outcome, as Frankie says, it's a way to effectively communicate. And it's a way to effectively enforce your rules, enforce the dynamic of the group. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, this is interesting. A lot of people are using the word happiness. Mm-hmm. And it's not that it's Alan says that it creates an atmosphere of happiness when the leader maintains a sense of humor. Yeah, a lot of people use the word happiness, that it's just a happier experience. And thank you for all of your participation. Yeah, but I call it convivial, but that's really a more happy dynamic, right? People are more pleased, more willing to participate, and a lot of times the process is ongoing. People are willing to come back. Yeah. It's not pleasant if you've got rudeness and uncivility and they're not happy to keep trying, to keep working forward to reach our successful outcome. Creates an atmosphere of happiness. I'll go for that. Mm-hmm. Zoe says that when you have a sense of humor, it promotes good humor in everyone. And it is true. It will cause the other participants to have a sense of humor, too, because the dynamic will be one of, I'm going to call it happiness now. See, I wouldn't have used the word happiness. But it will create an atmosphere of good humor, and then everybody will act in a more good-humored manner. Because we lead by example, don't we? Yeah, we do. We lead by example, and people learn what to do. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Douglas says having a sense of humor prevents arguing and rudeness. Yeah, we just don't do that in this group. That's all there is to it. We have opinions. We listen to other people's opinions. But we don't, and we can not agree with them. I suppose that's arguing in its way. But arguing not in a nasty fashion, we're a team type fashion. We're working towards a successful outcome. We're in this together. Yes. Mm-hmm. And Aaron and others are pointing out the fact that actually the reason to have a sense of humor, and I think this is actually true, that the reason to have a sense of humor is that it is a control tactic without hostility. A control tactic. I think it is, because it's a way of leading the group down the path to success, of not getting bogged down and just fighting about something. It's a control tactic. I'll go with that. Control tactic without hostility. Mm-hmm. When we think of control tactics, oftentimes we think of something kind of strict, you know what I mean? Kind of, we will not be doing that as a sentence. Have I used that sentence on actual human beings? Yes, I have. But only when the sense of humor concept fails. And sometimes it does. Sometimes you have to go towards more obvious assertion of control. But it is a sense of humor is a control tactic without hostilities. Now that we've decided we'd like one, a sense of humor, and we'd like to employ it as a control tactic, the next question is being asked, and it's, you know, this show, we're very practical, right? We don't just talk about theories. We talk about what actually it is that we're supposed to be doing. And so the next question is, how do we maintain a sense of humor? It ain't that easy. How is it that we're going to maintain a sense of humor? What should we do? Because that's really the bottom line. That's what we want to know. And a lot of people, Margaret and others, are saying that you maintain a sense of humor by being a good example so that the group dynamic is positive. Mm-hmm. It will be easier to maintain our sense of humor if the group dynamic is positive. Yeah, and so we model it in the beginning because the process takes a little while. We model it, we show it by example, and then other people react in a positive manner. And it will be easier to maintain everybody's sense of humor if we're all working together as a team. And that's really the key to it, right? Mm-hmm. Theodore said, and a lot of people are saying, that it's by being patient with the process. We maintain our sense of, how do we maintain a sense of humor? By being patient with the process. You know, experience will tell you how long it's going to last. You can look at the size of the group, the dynamic of the group, how many issues there are, how complex they are, and whether or not reaching a successful conclusion will involve outsiders, a vote, a change in the law, a permission that needs to be gotten in some way. Yeah, that's a good point. Contractors is another point. It might be something that you're building, something that, or something that needs to be done that you decide on, but outsiders need to do it, and therefore you have to deal with them, which will prolong the process, of course. Yeah. So you have to be patient with the process. Because mm-hmm. We all have to have our opinion. We all have to think about it. We all have to come to a conclusion. And in any negotiation, basically speaking, we all have to come to compromise that is workable and that we can all live with. Right? Right. It's a process. You got to be patient with it. We are indeed getting a lot of agreement on that one. You know, and there's a corollary. Christy and others are saying not only being patient with the process, but you have to be patient with the other participants. Well, of course you do. They're part of the process. You have to be patient with the other participants. They have to be able. We all have to make a team effort here. Yeah. We all have to reach. Well, we have to reach compromise. It takes a little while. And the further away we start, well, the more patient you have to be. Because we all have to think on it. And really, that's why sometimes each meeting, there's a lot of emails that go up and back, and maybe even, depending on how you're doing it, some phone calls, some snail mail, some conference calls. Because sometimes what needs to be done needs to sink in how we're going to do it. You can't think on this. Not everybody can think on the spur of the moment. They have to listen to it. And maybe see something in writing, some research, or look it up. And then decide. Yeah, I think that's true of everybody. You have to kind of think on it. So as the leader, we need to be patient with the process. Might take a while. And patient with the participants. That might take a while, too. It'll all work out. Keep your sense of humor. Mm-hmm. How do we maintain a sense of humor? A lot of people are saying by refusing to take offense. Yeah. By refusing to understand that someone is being rude and to use our sense of humor to diffuse it. by refusing to take offense. Edwin and Gunther and others are saying by being impossible to fight with. I think that's refusing to take offense, isn't it? Yeah. It's very hard to fight with someone who diffuses you constantly, publicly, in front of everyone, with a sense of humor. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if you refuse to go to their level and start to really fight, that's not arguing, but really fighting rudely, because arguing is good. It's going to be impossible to fight with you. Mm-hmm. You know, Max and others are saying that the answer is how do we maintain a sense of humor is by always remembering our leadership position. By always remembering our leadership position. We're in charge. We just decided that a sense of humor is a control tactic without hostility, Aaron, and others have said that. And we got a lot of agreement by always remembering our leadership position. We've got the control that's exerted. Mm-hmm. You know, this is a good way of putting it. And really, this is a, you know, I always say that there are no rules for Recipe for Peace Now. These are just suggestions, and you modify them. It's just like the recipes, they're suggestions, and you modify them according to your circumstance. But I think this is really kind of a rule that we should all follow. Charles says that you maintain your sense of humor by thinking before speaking. Now, that's a rule for everything, isn't it? You need to think before you speak. Think about your response. Mm-hmm. Before you answer in kind and things go from rude to permanently rude, by thinking before speaking. Yeah, what a good sentence. Excellent. Mm-hmm. So, we've now decided, and we got a lot of agreement with that. We now decided that we would like to have a sense of humor and that it's a good control tactic for thinking before speaking. Mm-hmm. So, but we can't be the only one doing this, right? I mean, we might be. Sometimes that happens. Sometimes you have a group. Especially, let's think about this, especially oftentimes in a workshop or a seminar, you have a group that's not very full of active participants, right? And sometimes you have a lot of activity. I always have like assignments, things to do. And if I'm doing a workshop or a seminar, I engage the audience. But some audiences are just better at it than others, and some people really don't want to. They just want to watch. They just want to. And so you want to encourage a group atmosphere of conviviality. People come to happiness. I like happiness. But you want to encourage a group dynamic, right? And so the question is, how can we encourage an atmosphere of good humor, of conviviality, of people actually calling it happiness. Because if you do, then people will be more willing to work, more willing to expend effort, more willing to get us towards our successful conclusion, which is what we're trying for, right? Right. So how are we going to encourage everybody to buy in? To even if they don't want to be such an active participant, to at least be part of the dynamic. Mm-hmm. You can't force everyone to be, I'm always the person in the front row with their hand up. Me, 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 teacher. I want to say something. Not everybody is. But they also need to participate and be a part of the dynamic. Mm-hmm. They can't just be out. They can't just be physically there, but not at all there, really. And That doesn't usually happen in a volunteer group because people are invested in whatever needs to be done. But sometimes that might happen in a workshop or a seminar or a compliance group. A compliance group being a group that is workplace related and compliance with Title VII, which is the anti-discrimination laws. And I know this is a global show, and I usually do that in the United States, but all countries have workshop, seminar-type events in their workplaces for their employees, and they're required to come. Yeah. Okay. So how do we encourage an atmosphere, a group dynamic? You know, Han and others are saying by respect for everyone. And that's really a good point, that everyone is treated respectfully and everyone's opinion is respected and thought on. Kelly and others are saying that you encourage an atmosphere of happiness by an expectation of civility. An expectation of civility. We've talked about this before, and thank you for all of your participation. We've talked about this before, that oftentimes you might even have a set of rules on how to behave in this group. Civility rules, I call them. And people are expected to adhere to them. If you put them in writing and they're very simple, or you tack them up on a board or put them on a PowerPoint or something, it will remind people, and they can see it. A lot of people think better if they can see it. Does that make sense? It kind of makes it more internalized to them if it's in front of them all the time. I don't know that I'm such a visual learner, but a lot of people are. They really like to see the words and kind of glance at them as the process goes forward. It's not a bad trait. It's just that there's a lot of people who kind of like to do that, and it reminds them how to act. Yeah, nothing wrong with that. Yeah. You know, Barbara and others are saying that the main group dynamic is not taking offense at opinions. Yeah, it's somebody's opinion. They're entitled. You're entitled to your opinion, too. We're not going to take offense at it, and we're not going to be rude. We're going to enforce civility. Because everybody, as Barbara and others are saying, is entitled to speak. Quite a few people are using the word peer pressure. And you know what? I think that's what diffusing rudeness with a sense of humor really is, right? Because you're doing it in front of everybody, because the rudeness was in front of everybody. And you need to do it now, right now, this instant, because you want to do it to maintain control and get back your civility before the rudeness sets in, because it will. And that is true, that you're using peer pressure because you're using the reaction of the other people in the room to diffuse the rudeness. And to not take offense. Right? Right. Now, this is very interesting. I do this too. And I'm going to say it depends on the group. It depends on why you're there. Pardon me. And it depends on how diverse the people are or how similar. But in any event, it's always good for a sense of team and a sense of civility and a sense of getting together, not only the potluck, which we all know is a tool, really, to get people to stay and to have a convivial time out and get to know each other. The food is not just because we're hungry. I always say that. But it's good to have what I'm going to call a group exercise for the group dynamic. And it's something that you do as a group. Now, those of you who have been here before, and if you want to hear prior shows, those of you who are new or you just want to hear prior shows, thank you all for all of your participation. You know that prior shows, the last five on our website, recipeforpeacenow.com, all of the shows, including the last five, are archived at the radio station, blogtalkradio.com/recipeforpeacenow. But those of you who have been here before know that I actually think a fun group exercise, if you can do it because you have the facilities, is to cook something together. And, you know, I say this all the time, if you have like a stir fry or something where you can bring the ingredients pre-chopped or whatever it is, you know, prepped. Like if you have a pepper, you devein it and you de-seed it and you cut it into cubes or chop it or whatever it is that you're doing, and you have it in a little pot, and you bring the items prepped so that nobody has to cut things or be really instructed or maybe even do something wrong. That would be bad. And so people argue that it's not really cooking together. It's watching me cook or watching somebody cook. But it's a group event, right? It's a group exercise. We gather around the stove and we prep, so we watch something being made. And really, I advocated for things that don't take too long and that smell really nice in the room and can be eaten immediately. Stir fry is good for that, right? Because you can prep all the ingredients. You put them in, you stir them around, you stir the garlic and the oil and the onions and like that first, and then you put the other stuff in, and you have the rice in a big rice cooker that's already prepped. And so everybody has watched it. Is that cooking together? Well, I'm going to call it that as an exercise. And everybody has participated. It has smelled delicious. It has looked like fun. And then we all get to eat it together. We stand around the stove and eat it and taste it. It's a group exercise. It's fun to do. And it gets us into a convivial dynamic, a convivial state of mind. And I see that there's lots of ways that we're going to maintain a convivial group dynamic with our sense of humor and with our ability to deflect uncivil actions. And I see a lot of people have different ones. So let's talk about these. I'm going to call them group exercises. Quite a few, and thank you for all of your participation. Quite a few people say that they actually sing together. Singing. People saying that they actually pass out words, and if they have a piano, somebody plays the piano. Mm-hmm. A lot of people do not have a piano, but they have somebody who plays a single portable instrument that can be used. Quite a few people seem to have a flute or some sort of a wind instrument just to keep the tune. Singing, I think, is very good. I haven't done it very much. You know why? Because I sing very flat. this is just telling on myself. But I was once asked to mouth the words in a church choir because I was leading everyone off. I was leading them flat, so there. But, yeah, singing is great. And it gets us all in the mood. You know, I'm going to say it depends again. People are advocating singing songs that everyone knows so that you don't have to look at the piece of paper and you can kind of link hands and sway and be enthusiastic. Because if you're tied to a piece of paper, it loses something, right? Because you have to read it and think about the notes and things. It depends if your group, you're positive, all knows the same song and all wants to sing it. Mm-hmm. People are going for patriotic songs or songs that everybody knows from their childhood. Mm-hmm. You have to be sure of your group. It's kind of like telling a joke. You have to be sure that everybody'd like to do that. But it is, if it's that type of group, it's a real good thing. Yeah. Some big groups do that, depending on their country, they sing a patriotic song. Rotary does it at the beginning of each meeting. At least in the United States and in the Rotaries that I've been to in other countries, whatever country you're in, they sing a patriotic song together. And it's kind of a stirring moment, depending on how many people are in there. It's pretty cool. The same concept about know your group and be certain that this is a good idea goes for prayer. Mm-hmm. A lot of people say that they have a prayer circle. You'll hold hands and pray, and usually there is, well, it might be a silent prayer for the good of the group, but usually the leader, which is usually us, or a pastor or somebody who is a more of a, I like to call it professional prayer leader, but someone who is very experienced in leading a prayer, leads. Usually there is a prayer, and then maybe a moment of silent prayer. And I like anything that causes you to hold hands with each other. I really do. Because I think that it is a bonding moment, a joining together moment, and makes us more of a team. Mm-hmm. And so I'm fond of the hold hands and do something. Prayer and singing are, of course, you must give care to the fact that everybody is willing to do that. And yes, this is a very good point about prayer, and I didn't mean to imply otherwise. I think it is especially good to have a prayer circle when people are not all of the same religion, because it brings us together to entreat the God that we worship. And if we do such a thing and we are not all of the same faith, of course, the prayer leader would do a very ecumenical prayer. Mm-hmm. And not to a specific religion, but just a prayer for resolve, a prayer for strength, right? That we can go forward as a team. I think that's a wonderful idea. I'm very fond of doing that, I must confess, if it's the right group and they are amenable to it. Mm-hmm. Interesting point. And yes, I like it even better than an actual formal prayer, depending on the group, because sometimes a formal prayer is hard or people don't want to. You know that there are quite a few people in the world who do not wish to pray with other people, A, because their religion frowns on it, and B, some people do not particularly subscribe to a religion. They don't have a faith like that. And so you don't want to exclude anyone. Prayer, very, very tricky. I personally, and a lot of people have put this in, I personally would rather hold hands in a meditation circle. If I'm unsure about a prayer circle, and you've got to be real positive before you do that. A meditation circle, however, allows us to think on the purpose that we're there. Think on the goal to be achieved. And yes, I think it should have a leader who makes a goal statement. Mm-hmm. And we meditate on it. Or we might have a breathing exercise. A lot of people are doing for breathing exercise. I think that goes with the meditation. Mm-hmm. We have a breathing exercise, right? Mm-hmm. And we hold hands in meditation. And we have a quiet moment, right? Quiet moment. I kind of like it at the beginning. I think it's good at the end, too. Especially if it's been kind of a tough process. It gets us all holding hands and thinking. And a lot of you use it as a timeout. Depends how long each session is, too. Quite a few people are going for a stretching exercise. Mm-hmm. If it's going to be an all-day session, for example, and we're sitting pretty much most of the time, I kind of like a stretching exercise. It rather depends on the group also and on their physical ability. I think that about yoga also. People are mentioning all kinds of, thank you for all of your participation, all kinds of, I'm going to call them athletic type exercises, like yoga and stretching and things like that. You got that. It depends on your group too. First of all, it can't be a huge group in order to do that, right? Well, stretching could all stand up and stretch in place. but that's, I suppose it's a group exercise, a group dynamic. If everybody's looking kind of sleepy, it's a way to get people to do something. Something kind of athletic that involves, for example, sitting on the floor and stretching in some way, you got to be real certain that your people can do it and that they're dressed for it and that they expect such a thing. Yeah, that's tricky. You have to really know your group. Mm-hmm. So we've had singing and stretching and meditation and prayer. There's an entire contingent of people who are advocating having somebody every day tell a funny story. We discussed that funny is in the eye of the beholder, therefore that's tricky. If you're going to do it, and I have, I am an advocate of a funny pet story or a funny animal story because they're hardly ever insulting to anybody. So, and everybody likes pet stories. Everybody likes animal stories. So I'm kind of an advocate of only that kind. You know, as a group exercise, I'm going to call this a group exercise. I think it's always, if it's the right group and the right issue, or it's a treat as a reward to work towards, I'm going to call it a field trip. We go someplace together. I like it as a reward, and that's really the truth. Unless the issues are such that we need to actually go and see something. And it's always fun to go and see something together. For example, we are a historical commission, and we're going to go see something that needs to be preserved, or a nature conservancy, or something that needs to be cleaned or helped. Sometimes we'd like to go see something instead of just look at pictures of it. And going together is always a wonderful bonding experience. I'm big on if you've got the budget, or we could all put in a little bit of money. It's not in the United States. It's not a very expensive thing to do to rent a bus, to hire a charter bus, charter a van, charter something to take us all as a group, and nobody's responsible for driving. Yes, secretly, people. You know, this is getting a lot of agreement, and also a lot of people saying that's a really good idea because then we can drink, right? Yeah, that's kind of what part of it too. Yes, we can have a better time on the bus and then we can sing songs, precisely. And yes, that's a field trip's a great thing, and also sometimes a trip is a reward as a treat to work towards, just a personal fun thing as a thank you. If there's a budget or you've worked with some sort of organization, like a not necessarily even overnight thing, like a boat ride or something with dinner, just a treat to all get together and kind of have it be the organization will treat us to a nice dinner in a nice place. Mm-hmm. It's something to look forward to, something to be fun to do together. And it will encourage a convivial atmosphere as we're working because it gives us something to look forward to as a group. Mm-hmm. And that's really what we're doing. Oops, we're kind of getting short on time because we had a wonderful discussion. Thank you all for being here, and thank you for all of your participation. Now, do we have time for one recipe? Sometimes I run over when we're kind of short on time. Sometimes I run over with this. Let's do the chickpea, the curry chickpea recipe, because I think it's shorter. I called this, okay, now those of you who have been here before know that I always say the same thing when we talk about the food part. But it's so important that I say it every time. Now, the food is a tool, really, to get us to have a convivial atmosphere, right? It makes for a nice time out. And since we're having a party, since it's a convivial atmosphere, you must communicate with your participants and find out if anybody has a food allergy, a religious prohibition, or a food prohibition. You don't want anybody to have a bad time, right? You got to know if they can't eat something or they won't eat something. Important to know, and you must communicate it. Also, if everybody's going to bring food, we need everyone to label the food, not what it is, meatloaf, what it's called, but what's in it, so that we can determine whether or not we can eat it. We can run our eye down the list. And I think, because I hate to run out, I think that the host, which is usually us, the leader, should have a little extra food and should have some food that everybody can eat, that I call a safe recipe, and also maybe an adventure recipe. Now, I'm going to do the adventure recipe because we've got like 3 minutes, and my safe recipe is a little bit longer. We'll do it next time. That's the slow cooker beef. But we're going to do the chickpea curry now. And ordinarily, a vegetarian thing wouldn't be an adventure recipe, but it has some unusual spices. And they're unusual in my area. They might not be unusual to your people. They might have eaten them before. But because it's a little unusual, and I'm not certain if people are allergic or don't eat these things, I'm going to call it my adventure recipe. And yes, people are asking this. I think chickpeas and garbanzo beans are probably the same thing. Those little kind of beige beans. We're going to use, let's face it, a can. We're going to use 2 big cans. We're going to drain the juice, which is really slime on beans, let's face it. We're going to rinse them underwater, and we're going to get rid of the shells. They're not really shells, but they've got like skin on them. First of all, it's ugly, and it's not tasty. We want to get rid of that. So we're going to, if they don't come skinned, usually sometimes tins don't have the skins in them anymore, but if they do, you want to get rid of, you wash them underwater and then put them out on a towel to drain them and get rid of any skins and get rid of all the slime that they come in. So we're going to have 2 big cans, 16-ounce cans of chickpeas. I think garbanzo beans are the same thing, basically. We're going to rinse them and drain them. We're going to have 1 tablespoon of oil, nice big onion or 2 onions that we're going to thinly slice. Let's have at least 4 garlic cloves. A lot of you think I use a lot of garlic. You think less, put less. We're going to crush those. Let's have 1/2 teaspoon of chili powder, just because I'm scared of too much spice. You can always add spice to things. And 1/2 teaspoon of turmeric and 1/2 of paprika and 1/2 of ground cumin. See, it's got a lot of spice to it, right? Now let's have a big can of chopped tomatoes. Mm-hmm. I know that some of you would like to use fresh tomatoes. Go for it. Yours will be better than mine. So we're going to heat our oil, and we're going to take our onion and our garlic, and we're going to stir fry them. We're going to cook them until they're nice and translucent. Takes about 5 minutes, right? Nice and soft. We're going to add in the spices, the chili powder, the turmeric, the paprika, and the cumin. And we're going to stir it around. It's going to smell fantabulous. We're going to add the chickpeas and the tomatoes. Did I say to drain the can of tomatoes? We're going to drain the can of tomatoes. Add the chickpeas and just the tomatoes out of the can. Stir it. You might need a little bit of, you know what? Instead of adding some sort of broth, I take it back. Let's not drain the can of tomatoes. Let's use the entire can with the, sometimes I use chicken broth or something, but that'll make it non-vegetarian. Don't drain the tomatoes. Use the entire can with the sauce. It'll cook through. It'll be fine. The chickpeas and the tomatoes, stir it all up. And we're going to simmer it. Well, everything's really cooked, right? We're just trying to make it hot and make the flavors combine. Simmer it 15 minutes because we've got the tomato juice in there, right? Yeah. So we've put all the entire can of diced tomatoes in there, chopped tomatoes. But you're going to need to stir this because it's not very wet, right? We're not boiling something. So don't let it stick to the bottom of the pot. We're going to stir it. We're going to stir it occasionally. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We've got it. That's it. And what kind of a recipe is this? Yes, the kind when you can make together, right? And it has to simmer for a few minutes, but you can kind of make it and then simmer it, and then we'll get ourselves some nice rice or something, and then it'll be done. It doesn't take very long. And it smells really nice in the room. And everything is basically cooked, and you come with the spices and with the onion already sliced, and it's all put together, right? Right. Delicious. It is vegetarian. I made it our adventure recipe because of the unusual spices. And I've gone overtime again. Ha-ha. Thank you. Thank you for coming. Thank you for being here. Thank you for all of your participation. If you would like to contact us, we're at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. The website, recipeforpeacenow.com. It also has the last 5 shows. All of the shows are at the radio station, blogtalkradio.com/recipeforpeacenow. Thank you for coming. Thank you for all of your participation. And please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.